I knew this very well, and so did John and Jane. But it was something I wonder if other people, either my age or older, really understood. Understood that class 6 planet or not, conditioned soil or not, planted crops or not, everything they've done and worked for doesn't matter when a spacecraft shows up in your sky and it's filled with creatures who have decided they want your planet and you're in the way. Maybe it's not something you can understand until it happens. Or maybe when it comes down to it, people just don't think about it because there's nothing to do about it. We're not soldiers, we're colonists. Being a colonist means accepting the risk. And once you've accepted the risk, you might as well not think about it until you have to. And during our week on the Magellan, we certainly didn't have to. We were having fun. Almost too much fun, to be honest about it. I suspected we were getting an unrepresentative view of colony life. I mentioned this to Dad while we watched the final game of the dodgeball tournament, in which the dragons were raining rubbery red doom on the previously undefeated slime molds the team Magdy was on. I was perfectly fine with this. Magdy had gotten insufferable about his team's winning streak. Humility would be a good thing for the boy. "Of course this is unrepresentative," Dad said. "Do you think you're going to have time to be playing dodgeball when we get to Roanoke?" "I don't just mean dodgeball," I said. "I know," he said. "But I don't want you to worry about it. Let me tell you a story." "Oh, goody," I said. "A story." "So sarcastic," Dad said. When I first left Earth and joined the Civil Defense Forces, we had a week like this. We were given our new bodies, those green ones like General Rybicki still has, and we were given the order to have fun with them for an entire week. "Sounds like a good way to encourage trouble," I said. "Maybe it is," Dad said. But mostly it did two things. The first was to get us comfortable with what our new bodies could do. The second was to give us some time to enjoy ourselves and make friends before we had to go to war, to give us a little calm before the storm. "So you're giving us this week to have fun before you send us all to the salt mines," I said. "Not to the salt mines, but certainly to the fields," Dad said, and motioned out to the kids still hustling about on the dodgeball court. "I don't think it's entirely sunk into the heads of a lot of your new friends that when we land, they're going to be put to work. This is a seed colony, all hands needed." "I guess it's a good thing I got a decent education before I left Huckleberry," I said. "Oh, you'll still go to school," Dad said. "Trust me on that, Zoe. You'll just work, too, and so will all your friends." "Monstrously unfair," I said. "Work and school?" "Don't expect a lot of sympathy from us," Dad said. "While you're sitting down and reading, we're going to be out there sweating and toiling." "Who's this we?" I said. "You're the colony leader. You'll be administrating." "I farmed when I was an ombudsman back in New Goa," Dad said. I snorted. "You mean you paid for the seed grain and let Chowdhury Shujat work the field for a cut?" "You're missing the point," Dad said. "My point is that once we get to Roanoke, we'll all be busy. What's going to get us through it all are our friends. I know it worked that way for me in the CDF. You've made new friends this last week, right?" "Yes," I said. "Would you want to start your life on Roanoke without them?" Dad asked. I thought of Gretchen and Enzo and even Magdy. "Definitely not," I said. "Then this week did what it was supposed to do," Dad said. "We're on our way from being colonists from different worlds to being a single colony, and from being strangers to being friends. We're all going to need each other now. We're in a better position to work together. And that's the practical benefit to having a week of fun." "Wow," I said. "I can see how you weaved a subtle web of interpersonal connection here." "Well, you know," Dad said, with that look in his eye that said, yes, he did catch that snarky reference. "That's why I run things." "Is that it?" I asked. "It's what I tell myself anyway," he said. The dragons made the last out against the slime molds and started celebrating. The crowd of colonists watching were cheering as well and getting themselves into the mood for the really big event of the night, the skip to Roanoke, which would happen in just under a half hour. Dad stood up. "This is my cue," he said. I've got to get ready to do the award presentation to the dragons. A shame. I was pulling for the slime molds. I love that name. Try to make it through the disappointment, I said. I'll try, he said. You're going to stay around for the skip? Are you kidding? I said. Everyone's going to stay around for the skip. I wouldn't miss it for anything. Good, Dad said. Always a good idea to confront change with your eyes open. You think it's really going to be that different? I asked. Dad kissed the top of my head and gave me a hug. Sweetie, I know it's going to be that different. What I don't know is how much more different it's going to be after that. I guess we'll find out, I said. Yes, and in about 25 minutes, Dad said, and then pointed. Look, there's your mom and Savitri. Let's ring in the new world together, shall we? Part 2. 12. There was a rattle, and then a thump, and then a whine as the shuttle's lifters and engines died down. That was it. We had landed on Roanoke. We were home for the very first time. What's that smell? Gretchen said, and wrinkled her nose. I took a sniff and did some nose wrinkling of my own. I think the pilot landed in a pile of rancid socks, I said. I calmed Babar, who was with us and who seemed excited about something. Maybe he liked the smell. That's the planet, said Anna Falks. She was one of the Magellan crew and had been down to the planet several times, unloading cargo. The colony's base camp was almost ready for the colonists. Gretchen and I, as children of colony leaders, were being allowed to come down on one of the last cargo shuttles rather than having to take a cattle car shuttle with everyone else. Our parents had already been on planet for days, supervising the unloading. And I've got news for you, Falks said. This is about as pretty as the smells get around here. When you get a breeze coming in from the forest, then it gets really bad. Why? I asked. What does it smell like then? Like everyone you know just threw up on your shoes, Falks said. Wonderful, Gretchen said. There was a grinding clang as the massive doors of the cargo shuttle opened. There was a slight breeze as the air in the cargo bay puffed out into the Roanoke sky, and then the smell really hit us. Falks smiled at us. Enjoy it, ladies. You're going to be smelling it every day for the rest of your lives. So are you, Gretchen said to Falks. Falks stopped smiling at us. We're going to start moving these cargo containers in a couple of minutes, she said. You two need to clear out and get out of our way. It would be a shame if your precious selves got squashed underneath them. She turned away from us and started toward the rest of the shuttle cargo crew. Nice, I said to Gretchen. I don't think now was a smart time to remind her that she's stuck here. Gretchen shrugged. She deserved it, she said, and started toward the cargo doors. I bit the inside of my cheek and decided not to comment. The last several days had made everyone edgy. This is what happens when you know you're lost.